ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Kristen LaJeunesse of Will Travel for Vegan Food. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The Texas Senate unanimously approved a bill last Wednesday that outlaws the use of carbon monoxide gas chambers to euthanize shelter animals such as dogs and cats. The ban is part of a national trend to outlaw gas chambers, which studies suggest is both cruel to animals and expensive for humans. Some rural areas of Texas have pushed back, claiming gassing is easier and more efficient than injections to euthanize cats and dogs. An identical bill is already waiting for a vote in the state House of Representatives. Senator Kirk Watson, who introduced the bill, announced its passage on Wednesday and said, "Killing dogs and cats with carbon monoxide is cruel, expensive, and dangerous." It wasn't until 2003 that Texas passed a similar bill, the Texas Euthanasia Act of 2003, that prohibited shelters from killing cats and dogs through drowning, shooting, clubbing, strangling, or gassing via car and truck exhaust. 30 Texas cities had already chosen not to use gas chambers. Gas chambers are still legal in some states, but many others have banned their use. When I moved to El Paso in 1984, the city was using a gas chamber which produced carbon monoxide from a Volkswagen engine. A group was formed called Animal Alliance, and after a year of protest and meetings with city council and letters to the editor, it was finally changed and the city elected to hire a vet to euthanize with injections. Texas shelters put down about 100,000 animals every year. Please don't contribute to this tragedy. Have your companion animals spayed and neutered.
The Justice Without Boundaries Tour is a new collaborative effort uniting activists from the United States and Mexico. The tour's goal is to share resources and build new relationships to empower grassroots efforts throughout Mexico and the U.S. in the fields of animal rights, environmental protection, and food justice. This tour will stop in 14 major cities throughout Mexico and will conduct more than 40 presentations. Tour participants will reach out and network with leaders, researchers, professors, students, and activists to discuss important food-related issues that impact both the U.S. and Mexico. The tour aims to train more than 500 activists to continue these presentations and sustain activism throughout the country. The tour takes place April 8th through May 7th, and you can learn more at justicewithoutboundaries.com.
The Center for Biological Diversity recently filed a lawsuit challenging a permit issued by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that will allow federal and state agencies to capture wolves that enter Arizona and New Mexico from either the north or the south and keep them in captivity indefinitely. Mexico has an ongoing program to reintroduce endangered Mexican gray wolves into the Sierra Madre, and wolves from the northern Rockies could easily move into the southwest at any time. According to the center's wolf expert, Michael Robinson, the Mexican gray wolf lived and loped across both sides of today's international border since time immemorial, and it's ridiculous that endangered wolves crossing lines on a map from one desert mountain range to another risk government capture and confinement. For these wild wolves to recover, they have to be allowed to roam freely. The center's lawsuit seeks protection of wolves found in New Mexico and Arizona north of Interstate 40 and south of I-10 from federal and state trapping. The lawsuit does not apply to wolves emanating from the Mexican Wolf Reintroduction Program, which was begun in 1998, the Blue Range Wolf Recovery Area, that lies between the two interstate highways. Those wolves, which have already suffered from reduced protections, are the subject of a separate center lawsuit seeking science-based reforms in their management. The contested permit allows a live capture of any number of endangered wolves for any reason, including the primary rationale of protecting livestock. The permit does not require livestock owners to undertake any measures to reduce their risk of losing livestock to wolves before trappers could remove wolves. The center's Robinson states that the Fish and Wildlife Service can cite no evidence that trapping wolves and putting them in cages enhances their recovery in the wild. Further, these beautiful animals should be allowed to play their important role in maintaining the balance of nature. We shouldn't have to protect vulnerable wolves from the illegal depredations of our own government.
Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we'll have a conversation with Kristen LaJeunesse, whose project Will Travel for Vegan Food has taken her to 48 states to sample food at close to 500 vegan restaurants. That's coming up next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on ACT Radio is Kristen LaJeunesse of Will Travel for Vegan Food. Thanks for joining us, Kristen.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kristen. Can you start out by telling our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in veganism?
Sure. It actually started with my parents, or technically my brother, who is 5 years older than I am. When I was much, much younger, he decided to leave home and follow the band Fish around the country. And when he returned from that, he had tattoos and dreads and declared his vegetarianism. And my parents were a little upset. They thought that it was really unhealthy. And so they decided to do some research to prove to him why it was such an unhealthy and bad decision for him.
Well,
and
is that the dreads or the vegetarianism?
We'll focus on one thing at a time. Yeah, so the vegetarianism. And in doing their research, they found that it was actually a healthier lifestyle. And so when I was 16 years old, they sat me down and said that they'd like to become vegetarian together as a family. And I was a little upset about it, but they offered to buy me meat and dairy if I still wanted it, although dairy wasn't quite the topic yet. And I decided to just kind of go with it. I'm relatively close with my parents and trust their decisions, so we all became vegetarian together. And then I went off to college, and I remained vegetarian, and my parents, who were living in upstate New York, got really involved in the local veg community there. They started their own group, and they started an annual event that still goes on today. It's called New York's Capital Region Vegetarian Expo. And just through meeting other people and learning about the environmental and animal aspects of a veg lifestyle and the non-veg lifestyle, they decided to become vegan. And I would come home from breaks and notice a lot of different things in the kitchen. Every time I would come home, there would be, you know, this weird new kind of milk or something. And we actually never had a conversation about officially them becoming vegan, but I knew it and I thought it was weird. And it probably took me 2 or 3 years to catch up to them. I went to a veggie event in Syracuse, New York, where I was living at the time. And I listened to a registered dietitian by the name of George Eisman talk about why dairy isn't necessary. And it was kind of in that moment that I stopped judging my parents and the other crazy vegan people around me and really listened to what was being said to me. And it hit me in that moment. And that was 6.5 years ago that I decided to become vegan.
So how did you get the idea to travel the country eating at vegan restaurants? What brought that to mind?
Well, probably 2 or 3 years into my veganism, I started to become that annoying vegan friend who was taking pictures of food everywhere she went and loved talking about it. And when I had moved to Boston for grad school in 2007, I joined some vegan groups there and found some people who I could relate to with my picture taking and crazy vegan stuff. And through talking with them and starting a job after grad school with an animal welfare organization, I just really fell in love with food after becoming vegan and the lifestyle, and was just introduced to, as a lot of you know and probably a lot of listeners, just like, you see so much more food and get to try so many more new things. You're really adding more into your diet than taking anything away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one day I stumbled upon some books and blogs about lifestyle design and creating passive income and nomadic living, and outside of veganism, that really resonated with me. And I'm like, well, how can I learn to do what I love for a living? I already have this great job, but I really want to travel. I'm tired of just talking about it. And right around that time that I was reading about all of this stuff about traveling for a living and everything, I posted kind of randomly to my personal Facebook page something like, I wonder how long it would take to eat at all the vegan restaurants in the country. Maybe I'm up for this challenge. And I got a ton of feedback from friends and family who were saying things like, this is crazy, you should do it, I want to do it, don't do that, that's nuts, and all these different things. It was kind of in that moment, after reading all this material about living on the road, and then also my interest in food and having already been, you know, enjoying taking pictures of it and everything like that. I just kind of put the two together and literally woke up one morning. I was like, we'll travel for vegan food. I got to do it. That's kind of how it got started.
And so you've been to, what, 500 restaurants across the country?
Almost, yeah. It'll be just over 500 by the time I finish eating my way through New York City, which is where I'm at right now.
And how did you get around? It seems like it's quite a trip. It looks like, based on your website, it looked like you really went all over.
Yeah, I purchased a used sports van. I spent a few months looking for something. I was really hoping to get a biodiesel, something like that, but the time crunch was a little too much. So I found this really affordable van that I bought from this family in the hometown where my parents live, actually. And my dad and I renovated it and built a bed in the back and some storage units. And so I literally just lived out of the van and drove through every single state except for North Dakota and Alaska.
Hawaii?
I did go to Hawaii, yes.
Oh.
Did you come to Texas?
I did, yeah. I spent quite a bit of time there, actually. I was in Houston for a while, and then Austin, and then Dallas. And I did stop in Fort Worth as well.
This question is burning in my mind. I knew I was going to ask this. What is the best vegan restaurant in the country?
There are a lot of amazing restaurants, and honestly, I have trouble even picking just one. I do have a top 10, which has kind of come into a top 20 now as I keep eating my way through the country. But I will say that one of the first restaurants to really steal my heart, and I still think fondly back on it, is a place called Veg in Philadelphia. I think it's about 2 years running now. It's relatively new, and it's spelled V-E-D-G-E, and it's right in the city. And I just had an amazing experience there. The food was absolutely fantastic and just really unique. They use a lot of whole foods, not so much in the way of the fake meat stuff, which I really appreciate. And the service was great. The atmosphere was wonderful. And I just always kind of think back on that place whenever someone asks me. It's the first place that comes to mind. But given that, there are still some really amazing restaurants throughout the country. And,
wow.
And in fact, I did write a blog post about it last November when I hit my one-year mark of being on the road. I did kind of a top 10 of various things. And so you can check that out, too. But, yeah, I need to kind of reevaluate that now because I actually just got a book deal, so I'll be writing a little bit about that in my book.
I was wondering if you were going to turn the traveling blog into a book.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm going to take much content from the blog itself because the blog is more focused on the individual restaurants. But in discussing it with the publisher, it is going to be more about the people that I've met on the road and kind of how the journey has changed my life. It'll be more kind of a memoir, but there will be some information there about the restaurants, and depending on how courageous I feel, I might name some of my favorite ones, but I feel like that's always tricky because I don't want to curse them and then they'll close or something after I, you know, talk about them in this book that will be out there for an indefinite period of time.
You mentioned on your website that you were going to try and interview the vegan business owners and entrepreneurs, and do any of those interviews stand out to you?
Yes, there are definitely a few. And there is this one woman in southern Illinois who I talked to. She runs a restaurant called Thanks Jordan Cafe. It's an all-volunteer-run restaurant, and all the proceeds go to cancer research for children. And I remember sitting down with her and immediately feeling connected to her. And as she was telling me about why she started the restaurant, I just was getting chills. She had this incredible story about battling cancer herself and then finding a plant-based diet through her struggle with cancer as a way to help put her cancer in remission. And she and her mother went through this kind of together to help her get through it, and they decided to start this restaurant to provide healthy food for people. And I think, as she said, it was a month after she opened the restaurant, her mom was diagnosed with the same cancer and died almost immediately. And so just a really intense emotional story, and she's just an incredible woman and someone who I plan to spotlight in the book.
You know, it seems like it's such a great community effort, too, to get the people involved and to do a volunteer effort with serving wholesome food to those in mm-hmm. your community.
So on your website, it says that you're going to end your travel for food. And, you just said that you're going to write this book. What else do you have on the agenda for the coming years?
Well, I actually have another website that I started a couple of years ago, and it's kind of been on the back burner because of the road trip. But it's a vegan wedding resource guide. It's called Rose Petals Vegan Weddings, and it's petals like a bicycle. And to be honest with you, I know nothing about weddings. I've never been engaged or married, and I honestly don't really, it's not a priority for me, but I have a lot of vegan friends, some of whom are getting married around the time, that I thought it would be cool to have a resource, because there are great resources like Veg News that does an annual spotlight kind of issue on weddings, but there's no one place to go to find food vendors, clothing vendors, photographers, all that stuff. So I started to put this website together in 2010. I launched it on Valentine's Day. And since then, I actually have someone who's working for me to keep that going while I've been on the road, but I haven't really focused on that much while being on the road. So not many people know about it. I haven't done much to promote it because I've been so busy, but that's one of the main focuses I'm going to refocus on when I finish through the end of trip party and all of that stuff, when I'm completely done with the Will Travel for Vegan Food moving portion of this project. So I hope to do that and continue to grow that, because I think it's kind of a neat resource, and I have yet to see anything else like it out there. And then I also have another business, which it stems from my background in social media and online marketing, and that is a consulting business where I work one-on-one with vegan and vegetarian business owners and entrepreneurs on how to best utilize social media, so things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and just general kind of online marketing presence, so blogging and website management. And that's really actually where my heart lies the deepest, I think. While I love travel and I love food and I love event planning, helping people thinking about weddings and whatever they want to do in the vegan community like that, my heart lies in marketing. I think it's one of the most powerful ways that we as a vegan community can take that kind of traditional, what people think of marketing as being this sleazy kind of thing, and make it something more positive and apply it directly to the vegan businesses so that we can help grow them more.
Well, I've noticed there's a tremendous increase in the number of vegan businesses online, and a lot of businesses that aren't vegan are selling a lot of vegan products. For instance, mm-hmm. just recently I was looking for vegan Easter candy and typed it into Google, and my gosh, it was like incredible the amount mm-hmm. of vendors that came up. And of course, I always try to buy from companies that are vegan centric, not mm-hmm. from Amazon or something like that just happens to have vegan products in mm-hmm. their webpage along with all the other products that they have. Do you see the competition from these larger vendors that sell vegan items? Do you see that as a problem for marketing for vegan businesses?
I don't know that I see it as a problem, because I do think that regardless of what your product or service is, you can automatically be unique and different simply by infusing your personality into it. I think that's a huge advantage, especially with small business owners that bigger businesses can't do very well, which is really add your personality to the mix and create a unique community, if you will, through just kind of expressing how much you love what you're doing and the product or service that you're offering. So there's actually an advantage to being smaller, to just starting out, or even if you're growing a bigger vegan-related business, the more mainstream or bigger companies that maybe are even buying out some vegan brands like Silk or Tom's or something like that, it can feel intimidating, but it really shouldn't be too much of an issue because, just like you said, you prefer to support vegan-centric businesses and not kind of these other ones. I actually just was reading a post that a friend of mine made, a vegan friend on Facebook, where she felt conflicted about supporting buying vegan products from companies that were very clearly not vegan. They bought out another vegan company or something. Mm-hmm. She thought, well, if I'm buying the vegan products from them, they'll see that I want those products, so maybe they'll add more and take away their other non-vegan products. But alternatively, I'd rather give my money to an all-vegan business. So kind of like, where do I go? So I see that coming up more now is in terms of the consumer side of things is, should I purchase only from vegan companies or support those vegan products that the other companies have so that they know that we want them kind of thing?
The thing that's sometimes is difficult is, you know, those larger places, the prices are usually cheaper. So, you know, you have to put economics to the side and go with your ethics, right?
And
you know, after your book launches, I imagine that you're going to inspire a lot of people to try and take on a similar adventure as you did. What do you think are some of the best lessons that you've learned after being on the road for, what is it, almost a year and a half?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I do feel like everyone will get something different out of an experience like this. It's definitely a unique thing, and it completely changed my life and my outlook on where I want to go and things I want to do, both career-wise and personally. But I would say the biggest thing is just don't be afraid to be alone. I think a lot of people struggle with taking any kind of trip, short-term or long-term, because they're worried about their safety or just being alone in general, not alone time. And that's the time that I grew the most, was in that quiet time when I was driving for 8 hours and was sick of listening to music or podcasts or audiobooks or whatever else I had with me. Was really just, it was almost like a meditative state after a while, where I could really focus on thinking about what I've done in the past, what I'm doing now, what I want to do in the future, kind of a thing. And so I would say just don't be afraid to be alone. And if anything, for me anyway, when I was traveling so much by myself like that, it really forced me to come out of my shell. I was much more introverted before starting the road trip and would never have had dinner or lunch with literally hundreds of strangers at this point. And the people that you meet are just, it's so amazing. And I think the biggest takeaway for me was that most people truly are good people. So don't be afraid to get out there and do what you love. And even doing it by yourself, you're still going to get the same amount of gain from it, if not more, by doing something alone, because it's that experience where you rely on yourself emotionally and physically and all those things.
And I bet you had to get pretty creative when it came to fundraising for such a trip.
You know, I really lucked out. I decided to do a Kickstarter campaign. So Kickstarter.com, which is a website that's specifically for fundraising for various things. And I honestly was conflicted about asking for money in the beginning, because I thought, you know, are people going to see the value in this? In my mind, the exchange was, you know, free marketing and advertising for all of these businesses. But for other people, and in fact, I did get some kind of negative emails about it in the beginning, is that they were looking at it as more like an extended vacation, and then I was just going to be, you know, flailing around and wasting money. And so setting that doubt in so early, I was a little unsure if anyone would even consider donating. But I thought, you know what, I have very little of my own savings, so I'm just going to go with it and see what happens. And fortunately, I did meet the goal that I set for Kickstarter. I did severely underestimate how much I would need to do this kind of project, but through doing Kickstarter, doing that fundraiser, I ended up meeting a handful of people who still donate to this day to keep me going, because they want to see the project be successful and they see the value in how, you know, how it's spreading the word about veganism in general and sharing the information about these businesses and restaurants. So I was really, really fortunate that the Kickstarter project worked out, and then through doing that, had some people that have stuck with me and have even become very good friends and have been very much on top of my finances and making sure that I can keep going.
And Kristen, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your travels?
Sure. The website is, you can either go to willtravelforveganfood.com or wtfveganfood.com. I'm also on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
We've been talking with Kristen Lachenesse of Will Travel for Vegan Food. Thanks so much for being with us, Kristen.
Thank you.
If you'd like to sample some vegan baked goods, come to the Vegetarian Society's Vegan Bake Sale that's going to be held at Earth Day at the Union Plaza between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Saturday. Come and taste just how delicious dairy-free baked goods can be. Cookies, cakes, and breads of all flavors will be available for purchase.
And for more great vegan food, you can join the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at its upcoming dinner on Saturday, May 4th, with guest speaker James McWilliams. That'll be at the Airport Holiday Inn. To make reservations, you can visit vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of Animal Concerns of Texas, you can find them by going to ktep.org and clicking the Listen button. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.